Hello, I'm Adrian Dahl.
And I'm Moira Donegan.
And whether we like it or not, we're in bed with the right.
So, Adrian, I was just talking to you off mic about the fact that I'm a little tired today.
Yeah.
And there are some people who would tell you that that's because I'm in my luteal phase.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, neither did anybody else until about 2 years ago.
Oh.
Today, Adrian, we are talking about something that has taken over the algorithms of every woman in America. That's right. We are talking about birth control misinformation.
Ah.
So what do you know about this?
Shamefully little. I follow enough influencers on Instagram to sort of get some of this content. So when you were suggesting this topic to me, I was like, oh yeah, like this. I can picture that. And of course, I've been friends with a lot of people who are on, some of my best friends are on birth control. We speak freely and openly about it, but you know, I have never taken it. I've never picked up a prescription for anyone. Like I wouldn't know the names or anything like that. So I'm really a babe in the woods.
Yeah, birth control is the subject of a lot of very big and strong feelings among the people who consume it. We're really talking today about hormonal birth control.
Yeah.
I think all of which on the market right now is for women, right? So we're talking about pills, implants, IUDs that prevent pregnancy by suppressing ovulation, thickening cervical mucus, and allegedly, although the science on this is unclear, also sometimes preventing implantation of embryos in the uterine lining. And we're talking about a very specific set of contraceptive products and medications that are available and which are used by something like over 90% of American women throughout the course of their reproductive years.
So for all the Rhythm Method heads out there, we're not talking about you today. This isn't about you.
Oh, we'll get there, actually.
Oh, nice.
We will.
Okay. Never mind. First thing I said assertively, and it's already wrong. Great.
Well, like throughout the course of the past, 5 years, really since the pandemic, we have seen this big surge in content, particularly online on TikTok and Instagram. This is mostly like vertical video-based content about birth control. And a lot of it, in fact, like most of it, is pretty scientifically dubious.
Huh.
So one study found that of the 100 most popular videos about birth control on TikTok, only 10% were made by healthcare professionals. And that 50% of the comments were opposed to hormonal birth control. Another study found that increased exposure to birth control content on these viral video platforms made teenagers less likely to understand menstrual health. So there really is a big push coming from the online wellness space and by extension from the sort of like Make America Healthy Again movement and the right-wing media apparatuses that are attached to it to discourage women from taking hormonal birth control, to encourage them to drop it, and to spread dubious or outright false information about what these medications do to your body.
Are you telling me that the influencer who tells me what she eats as a 110-pound girly in a day is maybe not the person to trust on medication?
She might not be entirely on the level, I gotta
say. But she's so good on granola. I mean, you gotta go to Erewhon. It's true. She's right. 110-pound girly is right.
Oh, we're actually gonna get into some very expensive seed diets, seed-based diets for your menstrual cycle. This is a thing that the Instagram algorithm will tell you to do if you spend a lot of time, as I did over the past couple weeks, in this part of the internet.
Okay, can we talk about the fact that maintenance phase for these kinds of things has a taste test episode? And I don't see any seeds in front of me right now, Donegan. I would like to eat anti-ovulation seeds right now while we're talking.
No, they're pro-ovulation seeds. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Look, I'll take it. If the seeds are good, I'll do it.
Listen, the seeds are expensive. If you guys want us to taste the seeds to be able to make that trip to Erewhon and drop the, $170 on nuts and seeds to regulate our menstrual cycles, subscribe to our Patreon so that we have the income for that kind of a thing.
Yeah, we need insane person money.
And I'm glad that you described this like 110-pound girly, right? Because that is kind of the prototypical anti-birth control wellness influencer, right? I imagine a Gen Z white woman, like in her 20s, very like fit, very toned, usually wearing like a matching Lululemon set.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks healthy. She's got a lot of energy in these videos. She's well lit, she's made up, and she's telling you to stop taking birth control, that it is bad for you, that she has quote unquote done her own research, right? And this is where I think it's important to make a pretty big disclaimer, right? Like, people have very valid critiques of hormonal birth control. Some people have had bad experiences, right? So a lot of critiques of hormonal birth control come from a place that often these wellness influencers will start talking about experiences of like medical misogyny and like misogynist neglect at the hands of doctors, right?
Yeah.
This sense that like there is insufficient research into like women's gynecological health, and that hormonal birth control is offered as a sort of a catch-all that doesn't treat the underlying causes of a, you know, gynecological health complaint, but only really treats the symptoms. That's a really common concern.
Yeah.
Hormonal birth control can also have legitimate side effects. A big reason people go off it is because side effects for the first couple months when you begin hormonal birth control can be like pretty extreme. We're talking about spotting, breast tenderness, cramping, like a lot of period symptoms, basically.
Yeah.
Like those can go on for a while when you start on birth control. And a lot of people are like, well, I went on this and I immediately felt like shit.
Yeah.
And so I went off of it. When if you stay on that medication, those symptoms tend to resolve themselves. But that's hard to tell somebody who's like really uncomfortable or in pain, right? Just like go ahead and keep on suffering for another 2 months. We promise it gets better. That's like not really a appealing message, right?
Yeah.
There's also like legitimate social justice critiques of the historical uses of birth control, right? So everybody should probably read Dorothy Roberts' book, Killing the Black Body, which shows how birth control has been used as a tool of eugenics. Birth control was tested on non-consenting populations in Puerto Rico when it was coming to market. Birth control was administered in a U.S. government-funded program to women in the Dominican Republic.
Oh, wow.
Who were told that they were getting inoculations, but were in fact being administered hormonal birth control shots. You know, this is something that has been used coercively in incarceration settings. It's been used coercively in sort of like welfare programs. There's like nasty ways to use hormonal birth control for eugenics purposes or for racist purposes, right? And I don't think we need to apologize for any of that. I think those are all legitimate critiques. It's not really what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
What we're talking about here is a weaponization of women's sense of their own bodies being sort of out of control or foreign to them, and of medical authorities being untrustworthy or neglectful or disinterested in their concerns, and people taking those legitimate grievances and weaponizing them for ideological purposes. So in that sense, this episode reminded me a lot of our natural childbirth episode that we did, I think just like a month or two ago.
Feels like 8 years, but yes, I think that's about right.
It's a similar phenomenon, right? There's a real failure on the part of the medical profession, both to investigate these health conditions experienced by women and to like gain women's trust and earn the trust of their women's patients, right? And those failures are being exploited by people who have an agenda that is contrary to women's freedom.
Yeah.
So one thing I also want to say is that hormonal birth control, for all of its flaws, is a miracle. When the pill was first approved in 1960, it was a society-altering intervention that improved the lot of humanity on a scale comparable to the invention of antibiotics. Premarital and casual sex became accessible to women without the life-altering consequence of potential pregnancy. But so did education and professional advancement. Women entered the workforce en masse in the last decades of the 20th century because of hormonal contraception. They entered higher education en masse because of hormonal contraception. They were able to live lives independent of men and to marry and partner with men only because they wanted to and not because they had to, because of hormonal contraception. In this way, the pill, or, you know, the sort of umbrella of medications and treatments that we refer to as the pill, it unleashed these like untold amounts of human creativity and potential and thriving. It elevated women to new heights of dignity by granting them these new levels of independence.
When you say it like that, I'm starting to hear why conservatives are not going to care for this. They're like, independence and dignity in this economy?
The things they hate for women to have.
Yeah,
but like also, for all of the valid critiques of gynecologists and obstetricians' over-reliance on hormonal birth control to deal with like gynecological pain, it's like also a useful intervention medically. So one of the big points made by critics of medical misogyny is that hormonal birth control is like sometimes the only available treatment for a lot of like women's health conditions. And it's true that that could reflect a lack of interest or investment or funding of other kinds of treatment to women's health conditions. But it's also true that hormonal birth control is like really effective for treating the symptoms of a lot of gynecological conditions, right? Like if you have endometriosis, you can be waiting for years for laparoscopic surgery.
Yeah.
But you can get on hormonal birth control and get your symptoms really alleviated like tomorrow.
Oh, I didn't know
that. Like same thing if you have PCOS.
Okay.
Or even, frankly, if you just have painful, heavy periods or acne, right? Those are symptoms that can be brutal or just unpleasant. And hormonal birth control is a great way to get rid of them. And it's also just kind of practically a better and more reliable way to prevent pregnancy than other methods. So like hormonal birth control is obviously not perfect at preventing pregnancy. Accidents happen. I've met some of those accidents. They're nice. But it has a much smaller rate of user error than other methods.
Right.
And a much smaller rate of user error than things like barrier methods or pulling out or the anti-birth control movement's preferred contraceptive method, the rhythm method. The rhythm method and cycle tracking, these have incredibly high rates of user error. Hormonal birth control kind of doesn't, right?
Right.
You also don't have to interrupt sex to use hormonal birth control effectively. You can take that pill any time of day, as long as you take it roughly the same time of day every day. And then you don't have to be like, honey, hang on a second, which some people really find sort of prohibitive. But most crucially, and I really think I can't stress this enough, hormonal birth control is good because it is woman controlled.
I was going to say, it's not just, honey, can you hold on a second? It's, honey, you did put it on, right?
Yeah.
You're not relying on someone else who may not have your best interests at heart to make a crucial decision in your own health.
Yeah. If you're relying on the pill, you don't have to rely on men cooperating. You don't have to rely on men denying or delaying their own gratification, which they famously hate doing. And you don't have to rely on them telling you the truth. And it's like kind of bleak that this is not something that women can expect of their male partners, but it's often not. It's something that hormonal birth control puts into women's own hands so that the people who face the greatest consequences of unprotected sex also have the greatest control to avoid those consequences.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the things you encounter in discussions about hormonal birth control is, like, again, in our natural childbirth episode, is people really understand experience as a qualifier. So I'm just going to like lay my cards on the table. I do not have and never have had what are considered like pathological menstrual cycles, but I did have uncomfortable ones. I have been on hormonal birth control now for, God, like 12 years I've had an IUD.
Mm.
I love my Mirena IUD. It causes me no negative symptoms. And crucially, it allows me to not menstruate. I haven't had like a period really since like 2015. But I was experiencing what are considered like common mid-range period symptoms when I was menstruating. So like really heavy cramping in my lower back and my lower belly, like breast tenderness that made it like kind of painful and uncomfortable just to like get dressed, let alone like go for a jog.
Ooh.
And like really heavy bleeding and just like exhaustion, like crazy fatigue, right? This is all stuff that most women are dealing with like a week out of the month if they're not on birth control. Birth control took that all away from me and I don't need it for pregnancy prevention. I don't have any debilitating gynecological health issues. I just thought, you know, this is an improvement to my quality of life. And so I did it and it's great and I love it and never take it away. And I don't particularly have a lot of investment in the idea of a natural cycle or of what my uterus is quote unquote supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
That is something other people feel very strongly about and something that is motivating, I think, a lot of these wellness influencers who are going online and talking about ditching birth control. So it's hard to trace exactly where this like new wave of anti-birth control propaganda began and where like older kinds of just straight anti-choice, like classic anti-choice messaging ends.
Yeah.
But speaking in broad terms, this trend has been building post-pandemic.
Ah, I see.
And it's really taking advantage of the distrust of doctors and medical expertise and the sort of like alternative medicine, holistic, naturopathic medicine resurgence that we've seen since that era. And I actually think one notable origin point in the surge of anti-birth control information, or at least where this first started emerging in my own feeds, is in a kind of separate wellness trend. Adrian, have you ever heard of something called cycle syncing?
I think so. That's when you sort of try to kind of lean into your cycle and like use lifestyle and diet, I'm guessing, to either alleviate PMS or to reduce symptoms. Is that right?
Sort of, but I think you're sort of underselling what cycle syncing has become, which is much more of a broader sort of like lifestyle trend promulgated on these platforms, advocating for like wholesale changes to activity, understandings of one's own capacity, understandings of one's own rationality, based on the different phases of the menstrual cycle. And this started, as far as I can tell, with a 2021 study of athletes. It's a study of women athletes that examined whether the menstrual cycle phase has an impact on athletic performance. I'm highlighting it here in the doc.
It's called The Impact of Menstrual Cycle Phase on Athletes' Performance, a Narrative Review. Oh, so it's not even an article. It's a review.
It's a review of a few different studies.
Okay.
And so could you also read this highlighted portion here?
So this is from the abstract. Studies examining perceived performance consistently report that female athletes identify their performance to be relatively worse during the early follicular and late luteal phases. Studies examining objective performance using anaerobic, aerobic, or strength-related tests do not report clear, consistent effects of the impact of menstrual cycle phase on physical performance. So they're saying you feel shittier and therefore think your performance is worse, but actually it doesn't have any impact?
Yeah, so it's saying that women athletes are reporting that they don't feel like they're performing as well overall at two phases of their cycle, which is early follicular, so right after your period, and late luteal, so right before your period.
Okay.
That kind of makes sense to me, right? The period, especially if it's unmedicated, can be uncomfortable. But it's also saying that when you actually objectively measure how well those athletes are doing, there's no change.
Yeah.
So it's women who are saying, I don't think I'm doing as well, and then are doing just as well.
Yeah.
It's also like really hard to isolate menstrual phase as a variable because all kinds of different things impact something like athletic performance, and menstrual phase would be just one in terms of like diet, in terms of how well they're sleeping, in terms of like other stressors, in terms of injuries, you know, all these kinds of things are also at play. And this is just one variable that can't be very well isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the conclusion, so it says a substantial proportion of female athletes believe their performance is impacted by menstrual cycle phase, but the research pertaining to objective measures of performance throughout the menstrual cycle does not provide a definitive indication of how performance may fluctuate throughout the menstrual cycle. Many studies have concluded that performance does not vary between menstrual cycle phases.
Okay.
So these are like really inconclusive results that overall seem to suggest that this isn't really a thing.
Yeah.
But the study is misrepresented online.
Of course.
Where it goes viral among fitness and wellness influencers who claim that it makes basically the exact opposite conclusion that it does. So these influencers begin suggesting that their followers curate their exercise regimens and then also their diets and their sleep schedules and then more and more of their lives around the menstrual phase.
Yeah, just eat raw beef the entire time. Eat, I don't know, bull testicles. I mean, it's obvious why they do this. I'm sure we're going to get to the political dimension, but also health influencers are there to tell you that you can biohack your way out of just about everything. Like, do you guys know that if you drink things with like carbonation or like with more potassium, or, you know, if you cut out red meat during your period, like it's something, right? You have to sell people on an intervention, on some kind of biohacking. And that's very clearly not what that original study or that initial review was suggesting.
Yeah, like you can see why this kind of thing caught on for the fitness and wellness influencers, because it creates an easy way to sell something new in a sector that like gets prone to stagnation, right? Where the actual good advice in health and wellness, as we know from our friends at Maintenance Phase, is like kind of boring, right? Yeah. It's like the actual good advice is like try to get enough sleep, try to move if you can, try to eat decently and enough. And like that's kind of it. And it's pretty repetitive, right? This gives them a new way in. And it also sort of opens up a lot of opportunities to sell stuff. So I mentioned earlier this concept of seed cycling, which is a notion that women can eat different kinds of seeds during the different phases of their menstrual cycles in order to like sort of promote menstrual health or like overall wellness. The kind of benefits you're supposed to be getting are sort of often kind of hard to measure. So it's like, okay, if you eat pumpkin seeds during one phase of your cycle, you'll have more energy. And if you eat sesame seeds during another phase of your cycle, you can, you know, reduce the chances of cramping or whatever. There's also a lot of sort of inconclusive but widely touted advice about vitamins. So one of the things that the cycle syncing influencers will advocate for is this idea that different phases of your menstrual cycle deplete your nutrients, and therefore you should buy and take various different supplements at various different points of the month. So there's a lot of like opportunity to sell stuff in this concept, right?
It does seem like health influencers want to turn all men into vampires and all women into like gerbils. They're like constantly just like hoarding nuts.
But like on the other side, this succeeds for ideological reasons, right? It succeeds in part because it affirms something that a lot of people kind of already want to believe, which is that women are ruled by their hormones.
Right.
So the cycle syncing trend generates growing interest in the menstrual cycle in online wellness communities, which are overwhelmingly centered around young women to begin with. So this fad generates a lot of its own misinformation about the menstrual cycle. We should probably just do that episode at another point. But the short version is that, no, ladies, you are not incapable of work, rationality, or critical thought for 3 weeks out of every month. But for our purposes today, what you need to know is that the trend had a lot of emphasis on the cycle as determining your energy, your state of mind, your capacity. The claim was that everything you need to know about why you feel tired, angry, lonely, hungry, or energized can be answered by looking to what point of your menstrual cycle you're at. And crucially, I think one of the reasons this was kind of an appealing trend for a lot of people was that it emphasized the cycle as commanding rest. It created a permission structure for rest, right? So you'll see in this kind of genre of online content, a white woman being like, women weren't meant to work all month, and putting up like a pie chart about the menstrual cycle and being like, we're exhausted during our luteal phase. And this is how you get some of the trad wife influencers involved.
But we do stand a lazy queen on this podcast.
Well, like it sort of justifies rest. It creates a medical permission structure, a quote unquote medical permission structure for rest, that is also evoking this like naturalized justification for the idea of women's unfitness for public life and for paid work.
Yeah. I mean, people who fall for this trend online probably are too young to remember that when Hillary Clinton ran for president, the idea that like she wouldn't be fit to be commander-in-chief for a certain time of the month was like something that people like would say into cameras with shocking regularity. People who get paid to say things into cameras, not like some dude at a diner.
And now that's something that women are saying into cameras in their Lycra with their, you know, high ponies and their Botox faces.
Hashtag progress.
Well, another thing that's kind of shocking about this trend is how many of the women who are really leaning hard on the word natural when they tell you to get off birth control have these faces that are just inflated with fillers. And right. It's like, well, what's natural about that, right? Some interventions into the body are acceptable and some aren't. And I am going to give a little spoiler alert to our listeners that I think that that might be an ideological difference.
What?
More than a medical one.
God, I've been listening to this podcast for 3 years and you're still managing to surprise me.
So the thing about hormonal birth control is that when you're on hormonal birth control, you don't have really a menstrual cycle, right? Hormonal birth control suppresses ovulation. You don't need to bleed at all on hormonal birth control. In fact, when the pill was introduced on the market in 1960, it had that packet of placebo pills at the end of every month, not because it was medically necessary, but because marketers thought that American women would be too freaked out if they just stopped menstruating altogether. And so it was meant to make the pill more socially acceptable.
Oh, wow.
To retain a rhythm of menstruation. So you can just be on hormonal birth control and not menstruate at all. When you're on hormonal birth control, you're not really in this sort of cycle merry-go-round. You know, I think a lot of people who are not on hormonal birth control do not particularly understand their own energy or capacity or emotions to be like so massively different and determined throughout the different cycles of the month or phases of the month. But this idea was that hormonal birth control like interrupted or corrupted this natural process, right? It posited this like dangerous, unnatural intervention in the authentic rhythms of the body and of the self. So this idea flourished almost as a matter of course. It followed both the ideological logic of the cycle syncing fad, as well as the influencer's own monetary incentives, right? If you really believe or are pretending for the sake of your social media following to believe that the menstrual cycle represents this essential rhythm of life that tells us something needed and necessary and true about, you know, female human beings, then not only are you going to dislike hormonal birth control for interrupting that truth, but you're also going to tell your followers to get off it so that they can more effectively, you know, buy your seed packet or whatever. So the major cycle syncing entrepreneurs began pushing anti-birth control content on their feeds. And the one I want to pay attention to is a woman named Nicole Bendayan. Have you ever heard of this woman?
No, I have not.
She is an American wellness influencer. She is, I believe, 30. She lives in Valencia, Spain. Must be nice.
Well, now she gets to tell me anything. Anyone who's made the wise decision to live in Valencia, which is a stupendously beautiful city, yeah, just tell me what to take. I'll do it. I'll eat all the nuts.
She has over 1 million followers across Instagram and TikTok, and she offers a $35 per month subscription service in which people who sign up, members, can get access to her hormonal health, quote-unquote, classes. These are just videos of her talking.
Ah, okay.
And they also get cycle-syncing meal plans.
Mm.
She frequently makes false claims on her public feed about hormonal birth control. She claims that it has adverse health effects, and some platforms have removed a few of her videos for violating their terms of service related to medical misinformation. If you read quotes from her now, she has clearly like lawyered up, and she's like, well, you know, I am just an educator. I'm not a medical professional. Like, you should always do your own research. It's like very like dodgy. She's just like dodging accountability. But what she is doing is lying and spreading lies in a very, very large platform.
She's like, your idea of cycle syncing may differ from those of Nicole Bendayan, her shareholders and subsidiaries or whatever. Yeah.
And, you know, she has continued to encourage her audience to discontinue hormonal birth control for the sake of their quote unquote health.
Mm.
And she also offers an even more expensive program. It's a few hundred dollars that is a 3-month subscription in which she will test your blood and tell you how your hormonal birth control has diminished your vitamin levels.
What is it about female grifters and just wanting your blood? Like, just a little vial. You're like, no, I said no. This is weird. You're not a doctor.
Adrian, you'll be shocked to discover that Nicole has no medical training.
Yeah, I am plotzing over here.
I pulled a couple of screenshots from her website. Do you want to describe what you see?
I mean, the first thing I see is purple. Just so much purple. It's a woman wearing purple. She's looking into the sun. She is pushing the hair out of her face. The title is The Sync Society Community, Start Getting in Sync with Your Cycle. If you gave this to me in a script I couldn't read, I would assume that woman is going to have her cooch lasered, frankly. That's what it looks like. It looks like a laser hair removal place, yeah.
Yeah, it is like the graphic design of the worst gynecologist you've ever been to. She's in a kind of clingy purple dress. She's got a blue bag and shoes. She is like dressed for a city. It's like an urban style, but they've got her either in or I think maybe photoshopped into what looks like a pretty rural background. She's like in front of
a barn door.
Yeah, there's like some hydrangeas behind her.
Also purple.
So that's one image. Then there's this other one. Can you describe this one?
Yes. This is clearly the landing page of the Sync Society, which has four tabs: home, about Nicole, guides, and blog. And then it is her in a gray tank top, living her best life on top of a beach. Probably, I don't know, is this Costa del Sol or something like that? It's somewhere. This does look to me very Mediterranean.
There is a palm tree.
There's a palm tree. And she's like doing a kind of like end of a mental health commercial right after she's taken the blue, red, green, or purple pill or whatever they're hawking. She's now in the happy phase of that. And kind of a yoga kind of thing. And it says, connect with your cycle to optimize your health and wellness. And then there's a little tab here that says, chat with me.
Yeah, you can get access to Nicole's advice. And then this is a ad for a course she has where she is sitting, again, in that like same color purple.
Yeah.
And you can see her full on. You can see her unlined, very, very full face. And it's an ad for one of her courses. It gets synced, your menstrual cycle 101. And it's free for members. And if you join and pay $35 a month, you can watch her talking about shit she does not actually know anything about or understand.
Oh my God, should we join?
Once again, if you want me to take this class, sign up for the Patreon.
Yeah, it's patreon.com/inbedwiththeright.
That would be such a delicious waste of our time. Okay, yeah. Anyway. So like one thing that I have noticed about these influencers is that they all say that hormonal birth control is bad, that it was bad for them, that they felt bad on it.
Yeah.
But what harm it actually did to them is kind of hard to pin down, right? So as we mentioned, a lot of people have like real legitimate adverse side effects from birth control, like nausea, headaches, a lot of cramping, acne, but also a lot of people, ding, 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 me among them, take hormonal birth control and feel absolutely fine.
Yeah.
There's another thing is that hormonal birth control, we refer to it as this one item, as if it is like just one medication. In fact, there's a lot of different kinds, both different ways to access or take it, and also different combinations of the hormones.
Right.
So they're basically all combinations of estrogen and progesterone, but some are progesterone only. Those tend to have lower risks of things like blood clots or headaches than the ones that also contain estrogen. Some are very low dose, right? So if you've had like a bad experience with hormonal birth control,
you can try a different one.
Try a different one. Yeah. It's a little bit like
SSRIs, right?
Antidepressants. Yes. Yeah.
I was just going to say, yeah, exactly. Because it's the same thing where like everyone I know who's on them tries different ones. And like, yes, there's some that have bad side effects for people. And then you try the other ones. And yet, like in the MAHA movement, it's very clear that like, no, they're all bad and they're all bad for you. And like, and the anecdotal evidence is always like, I took this one and it was bad. And like, I mean, I think that's even true for antibiotics. My mom had to go off a particular antibiotic and onto a different antibiotic. They're like, you're not reacting to this well. Like, it's something that doctors do all the time. But yeah, the fact that we use it, sort of the monolithic birth control, is like kind of a tell already.
Yeah, my mom is allergic to penicillin.
Yeah.
Which, when she was born, meant that she couldn't take antibiotics. But now there's other kinds. And
right.
So she doesn't have to die of a staph infection, right? If you have a really bad reaction and just hate being on Orthopervera, that doesn't mean you can never use hormonal birth control.
Right.
You can try another one, right? And for a lot of people, there's just no side effects. A lot of people do find one either immediately or through trial and error on which they feel good. And their main side effect is that they are not pregnant, right? But what you do get in these videos is a lot of women first emphasizing medical misogyny and distrust of doctors. That's usually how they open. And then they describe their own symptoms in very vague terms, right? So they're talking about stuff that sounds like it could be a cold or an autoimmune disorder or mental health issues or just like staring at a screen for too long. It's like, God, I was on hormonal birth control and then I started developing a very mild headache. You know, like wow. It's content that's designed to make you think like, oh God, am I starting to feel that right now? So they talk about birth control as inducing like brain fog or depression. But the most common phrase I kept encountered was, I didn't feel like myself.
Oh, am I taking birth control? Is this how I find out?
So it's all like very imprecise, right? And that's by design.
Yeah.
And then they contrast that bad feeling on birth control with a better way they say they felt after they stopped taking it, which was also in similar imprecise terms depicted very positively, right? Like I felt good, I felt healthy, I felt rejuvenated, I felt natural, that's a big one.
Yeah.
And I felt like myself.
So do we know whether Nicole Bendayan developed this theory of not taking birth control before or after she moved to Valencia? Because I was going to say, maybe you just felt more like yourself because you're in a pretty great place with amazing food.
I felt so much better when I moved.
She like moved from like, I'm sorry, but Nebraska to like Valencia, Spain. It's like, yeah, you're gonna get a little bit of a pick-me-up there, my friend.
But like, this is all to say that the issue of birth control is often pitched kind of less as one of health per se or like physical health than almost as like a spiritual matter, right?
Yeah.
It's like going off the pill is depicted as like this metaphysical quest for a more authentic self. So the Times, the New York Times, did a big piece last year on birth control misinformation online. And they quoted one woman who stopped taking the pill after seeing all this anti-birth control content as wondering, quote, who am I without birth control?
Interesting.
Do you want to read this line?
Yes. Just over a year since Ms. Hamrick decided to stop taking the pills, she has figured out who she is without birth control. She's a mother. Oh, my God. She's a mother. Her baby is 4 months old. Oh, my God. The New York Times printed this.
The New York Times really, like, took a shit on this woman. They're like, I'm sorry. They're like, who are you without birth control? You're pregnant.
Like, are they taking the piss out of us or of her? I don't even understand
of
this.
Of her, I think. At the end of the article, she goes back on birth control.
Okay.
It's pretty tragic.
Oh.
She was clearly at kind of like a difficult phase of her life. She just made a big move. She just started dating this new guy. She was in her 20s. They like had talked about how they weren't ready to have a kid, but she wanted to go off birth control. And then she got pregnant within like 4 months and had a baby. And now they are like pretty clearly lost navigating new parenthood, which is this like identity mind fuck in which you're underslept and don't know who you are.
Yeah.
And can't afford anything. And now she's back on birth control because she doesn't want this to happen to her again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the description of like coming back to yourself, it feels like that's how people talk to me who've just like discovered mindfulness or whatever. Like it comes out of a mental health space or out of like a self-care space rather than like a medical space, which like this very much is.
It reminds me of like, you know, everybody knows that one guy who like went to Brazil and did ayahuasca, you know what I mean? Like, and then he comes back and he's just so fucking smug. It's like, you're still the same douchebag you were 3 months ago before you did this like little imperialist adventure to the jungle and took drugs.
Or the person who goes to like a silent retreat at a Buddhist monastery and then paradoxically enough can't shut the fuck up about the silent retreat. You're like, why don't you make like the Buddhists, like you did at the Buddhist monastery and shut up about the fucking silent retreat. These are very Bay Area problems for your listeners. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, we are very much revealing the fact that we live in San Francisco. But so this anti-birth control trend that like originates on the wellness side of the internet very quickly metastasizes beyond that section of the internet, or rather like through that section of the internet that is already like leaning kind of conservative.
Yeah.
And it gets taken up by the token young women at conservative media outlets.
Right.
So every one of these like right-wing propaganda outlets has a couple of like young women who are trying to be the part of that institution that can hold up like the female side of the market, right? They're audiences are skewing male, but they always have a couple of token hot girls who are there to try and talk to young women and bring them over to the side of conservatism. And those girls went hard against birth control over the past couple of years.
Oh.
So you hear about places like Turning Points USA, the group of the now dead Charlie Kirk, and the Daily Wire, headed by the still alive Ben Shapiro. They saw their young women on-camera talent start pushing this anti-birth control misinformation to their audiences, which are largely female.
Which is so ironic, because if there is one kind of birth control that is more effective than hormonal birth control, it is Ben Shapiro's fucking face. And voice. Also voice.
Remember when he was like, "Wet Ass Pussy is a terrible song because my wife says that that's not supposed to happen"?
Yeah, yeah.
That was beautiful.
I mean, I don't think I've ever recovered from that. I mean, he read the entire WAP lyrics out.
I said, certified freak 7 days a week. Wet ass P word. Make that pullout game weak. Yeah, you effin' with some wet ass P word. P word is female genitalia. Bring a bucket and a mop for this wet ass.
The amount of libido in the world went down by like 15% while he was reciting this. Like, ooh, I don't think the sex thing is for me anymore, you guys.
Alex Clark, who is a podcaster and influencer affiliated with Turning Point USA. She hosts the right-wing wellness show Culture Apothecary. That's what it's actually called. She has falsely claimed that the pill causes permanent infertility. It does not. And that it can change who women are sexually attracted to. We're going to come back to this. But Adrian, would you read this tweet from Alex Clark from November 2022?
Yeah, this is from Alex Clark, who has a blue check on Twitter, so make of that what you will. Handle at YoAlexRaps with a Z. Look, I'm only reading what's here.
Millions of followers, okay? Like, this is who we are ruled over.
Yeah. Whispers, the birth control pill can falsely make women feel bisexual. Wow.
Yeah.
Huge if true. Although the ratio on this thing is not hot.
No, it's not great.
It has 170 likes. It has 763 retweets. And I'm going to go out on a limb and be like, these are probably quote tweets of the dunkage variety. And 347 replies. Yeah.
But this is actually a claim that gets taken up a lot.
Yeah.
Brett Cooper of the Daily Wire, she's another one of these girls. She looks like Ben Shapiro in that she's got like very intense eyebrows, but I don't think they're related. She also said in a viral TikTok that garnered about 250,000 likes before it was taken down, that birth control causes women to, one, gain weight. And this is honestly a subtext of, it's a subtext of a lot of complaints about birth control online, particularly in like wellness spaces. It's like, oh, this is bad for us because it's going to make us fat, right? She also claimed, like Alex Clark, that hormonal birth control can alter who women are attracted to.
I mean, which is kind of a funny way of like medicalizing the social impact you were describing. It does influence who women end up with, because it's harder to trick them into like basically staying with their deadbeat boyfriends, right? Like, they're naming something real, but they're making it medical when it's social.
Yes, yeah. If you take birth control, you are, in fact, probably not going to wind up marrying your high school boyfriend just because he trapped you with a baby by getting pregnant when you were 18.
Exactly.
And that might indeed result in you maturing and dating a different kind of guy who has talents beyond, I don't know, doing a kickflip or whatever.
Or gal.
Possibly, yeah. Many such cases. That is the danger of hormonal birth control. Candace Owens has called the pill unnatural.
Ah.
There's also this guy, Callie Means, and he's an advisor to RFK Jr., classic.
Great.
He went on Joe Rogan's podcast to denounce birth control. And his argument, and this kind of stood out to me, his argument was that pharmaceutical companies push birth control because it gets them lifelong customers, right? Women are on birth control for a long time. And what did this remind you of, Adrian?
That's what they say about hormones for trans kids. This is a very common kind of transphobic talking point that sort of tries to sound like it's a critique of the medical establishment, but really is only just like barely hidden transphobia.
There's like all kinds of drugs actually that you take for the rest of your life. Like the most commonly prescribed drug in America is Lipitor, which is a high cholesterol drug. And nobody is like, the evil big pharma lobby is trying to get us all on statins so that we can not have our like natural God-given heart attacks. You know, it's just like, it's not a consistent critique. It is very selectively applied.
God wanted your bones to get brittle and break. Stop chewing on that calcium pill.
So they make like a bunch of claims about birth control. And I'm just going to run through them. One is like the kind of classic that like a lot of kinds of hormonal birth control and like kind of only the really effective woman-controlled kinds of birth control are actually abortifacients.
Not true.
This is like an ideological anti-choice lie that relies on the dubious and sort of like really genuinely unclear idea that some kinds of hormonal birth control can prevent implantation of a fertilized egg. If you believe that a fertilized egg is equivalent to the human life of a baby or a human woman, you are a stupid, morally unserious person. But also, the idea is that then that fertilized egg has a human right to implant in somebody else's uterus, and that a drug that might theoretically at some point maybe also work by preventing that from happening is functionally an abortion.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're trying to trade off the rights of the woman compared to the rights of what you've just described, like, what do you think of women? If you're like, yeah, it could under certain circumstances, and I mean, it's maybe not a child, maybe it is a child, right? And like, well, it seems like you just don't like women very much.
I mean, also, like, the primary way that hormonal birth control actually works is by suppressing ovulation,
yes,
right? So there's no egg there to get fertilized.
Yeah.
So it's really like a highly contingent fantasy.
Yeah. If it happens at the wrong time, if it doesn't function as intended and then does function as intended, yeah.
Trying to make it make sense almost doesn't work because what it really is like a convenient ideological pretext for banning birth control, which they want to do because they don't like its social results, right?
Right.
The other claim these influencers make is that birth control will make you insane.
Oh.
And they frequently point to a study that finds a correlation between birth control, hormonal birth control use, and SSRI prescriptions among women.
Right.
This is yet another correlation causation confusion. It's a little bit like RFK's sense that like, oh, well, you know, once we started vaccinating kids, a lot more of them got autism. It's like, yeah, well, a lot more of them were being screened for autism.
Yeah.
Like a lot more of the women who are being able to see a gynecologist and get a birth control prescription are also being able to get referred out for psych, right? It's just a matter of who's getting access to medical care.
Who's covered.
There is the claim that birth control causes or makes women more susceptible to sexually transmitted infections. This is not true. There's one that causes infertility, not when you stop taking it.
Right.
It actually does while you are on it. And in fact, that is the point and the idea and something that we're doing on purpose. But, you know, they will point to this idea that women who are on birth control have fewer babies overall, to which I would like to say yes.
Right.
That's actually kind of the idea. Hormonal birth control is fully reversible. Most people's fertility will be restored in 3 months. For some people, it's more like 6 months, but the rate is back to about 100% after 12 months of cessation.
But this is like where they really sort of, they're intersecting with people's like deep anxieties and fears in this really malicious way, isn't it? I mean, I do know a lot of people who go off hormonal birth control when they decide to have a child and then are kind of freaked out when it takes a little while. And it's like, maybe that's an after effect of the birth control. The research doesn't seem to suggest that. What it probably is that you're now quite a bit older than when you had your last pregnancy scare, you know, in college or whatever, right? And like your body needs a little time. But it is this weird thing where like the idea that you're being punished for something. You didn't do what you were supposed to do, and therefore you're getting punished for it somehow.
Yeah, it's definitely like understood as karmic when really what it is like if you have a fertility issue, you're not likely to understand that issue or notice that issue until you're trying to get pregnant.
Right.
So there's an underlying issue that is not identified until the birth control stops. That does not mean that it was caused by the birth control.
Yeah.
That's a like post hoc ergo proctor hoc fallacy. But like birth control does not have the capacity to cause permanent infertility.
Yeah.
There is the argument that it decreases libido. That's not really proven either. There is some evidence that women who stop taking birth control experience a temporary spike in their testosterone production, which will probably make them feel a little hornier. It might also give them some acne. That's something that tends to happen in the first like couple months after people stop taking birth control. That doesn't mean that like sex has been deprived of you while you were on it. But again, I think this is a kind of ideological idea sort of smuggled into this medical fear, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm not doing sex correctly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not doing sex naturally. I'm not doing sex in line with a plan that has been laid out by God or evolution or whichever sort of author of destiny that you're relying on outside of yourself, right? It's this idea that there's something incorrect about sexuality that is conducted by people who are on birth control.
Yeah. Again, the only method of birth control that has been proven scientifically to decrease libido is Ben Shapiro's face.
Yes. You can look it up in the science. And that brings me back to this other claim. This is a recurring claim, is that hormonal birth control makes women attracted to effeminate men or, in fact, to other women.
What?
Yeah, this comes from like one shoddy study that claims to show that women who take hormonal birth control are more sexually attracted to men with, quote, more feminine facial features.
Oh, they didn't measure their skulls? That seems like an oversight. If you want the Atlantic to call you, you gotta measure some skulls.
Like, what does more feminine facial features mean?
I know.
Like, how do you measure that?
Yeah.
How do you separate correlation and causation here? Like, this is one of the clearest examples to me of the anti-birth control panic substitution of cultural commitments for science.
Yeah.
Because saying that women who are doing something you don't like taking birth control, are attracted to quote-unquote feminine men, that's an ideological judgment that's posing as a health measure, right? Yeah. It's not measuring anything about people's actual bodies or their actual health. So what these influencers are really saying, I think, is that birth control makes women non-compliant with heterosexuality as they imagine heterosexuality and aspire to live it,
yeah.
Right? And that's
yeah.
a vision of sexuality in which like sexual dimorphism and difference is really like maximized
yeah.
and valorized. Like women are like this and nature made women like this and they are the opposite of men in every way. And that is, you know, good. It's one in which women's sexuality is subordinated to reproductivity. The other thing they say is that if you're off birth control, you'll be really horny, like uncontrollably, but kind of only when you're ovulating. So it's this idea, it's fake. It's like not true, but it's this idea that like, in the quote-unquote natural cycle, women's sexuality is all about making babies and not about, like, their pleasure. And it's one in which, crucially, men's status and men's masculinity is proven literally, like, by their virility, right? Because what makes a man, quote-unquote, feminine in this imagination is not really that he's got, like, softer facial features based on some weird phrenology measure. It's that his partner is able to decide not to have his baby,
yeah.
right? That's what's emasculating. That's what's feminizing in his condition. So if these are people who have an ideological objection to birth control kind of disguised as a health concern, what is it that they propose instead, right? What is their idea of like a good cycle?
Yeah.
And this is where we come to this world's claims about unmedicated cycles. And that brings us back, Adrian, to cycle syncing. So I have put in a convenient pie chart from a menstrual tracking app called Femia, which, by the way, has terrible reviews on the App Store.
Nice.
And it shows, I think, pretty neatly what this world thinks the menstrual cycle looks like or should look like.
Wow. Okay, there's a lot going on here. Okay, it's a pie chart called Cycle Syncing, Making Lifestyle Choices to Support Your Monthly Hormone Cycle. There are four segments of this pie chart, different phases of your cycle, menstrual, follicular, ovulatory, and luteal. And then they each list energy, diet, exercise, and self-care for the duration of that phase. Okay, so maybe just as an example, during the menstrual one, you should rest or gentle activities like yoga or light walking, but during luteal, moderate activities like Pilates and walking. For ovulatory, high energy activities, social or group workouts, okay. And follicular, opt for intense workouts like cardio, strength training, or what's HIIT?
High intensity interval training. It's basically cardio.
Yeah.
So I would like to point out, especially the luteal phase, which you might notice is the longest phase.
Yeah, 14 days.
Is the one in which it has noted potential mood, appetite, and quote-unquote cognitive changes. Mm. Those quotes are mine, by the way. But like what this is claiming is that women's energy, cognitive capacity, sexual desire, and physical strength vary tremendously throughout the month based on the phase of her cycle.
And in fact, she should not be trusted for about a third of the month, yeah.
Right, yeah. Like, they tend to assert that women are high energy, competent, and desirous during only the first early phases of their cycle. So like the 1 week or so follicular and ovulation combined phases. But then they're low energy, low cognitive capacity, emotionally dysregulated, like crazy idiots who are physically weak during the much longer 3 week period comprising the luteal and menstrual phases.
Right.
So this is a chart saying, ladies, you're an idiot for 3 weeks out of the month.
Yeah.
So women can't go on hormonal birth control in this worldview because it makes them crazy. But women in the course of their natural, unmedicated menstrual cycles are, by the way,
are even crazier.
Also crazy. Yeah. So, yeah. Like, ladies, just do not have any trust in your own epistemic authority or your own judgment or your own desires, because they're wrong. It's just your lady parts, right? And this is what kind of drives me crazy about the appeal of this stuff, is that it's like women are doing race science against themselves, right? It's like they're looking to explain the vagaries of their own emotions, energy, mental health, cognition, personhood, not with like an inward look at their characters that might promote some kind of self-improvement, or an outward look at their circumstances that might, you know, lead to some sort of political engagement, but with this kind of like faux scientific gender essentialism that deprives them of both individuality and also like responsibility.
Yeah.
It's saying, I can't be held responsible for my own life. I am a victim of my hormones. It's like, no, you're not. You're an adult. So where does this come from and what's going on here, right? There's a Christian right ideology at play that posits that any intervention medically in sexuality to like mediate or prevent conception is like sinful. There's a eugenicist and racist ideology of purity. There's a lot of emphasis in these videos about the impurity of hormonal birth control and the purity of an unmediated body, which I don't think needs to immediately lead you to like, okay, we have to sterilize all the racial undesirables. But it does make me think, it's like, okay, well, if the best body, if the morally best body is one that has no medications in it, what do you think of like disabled people, you know?
Yeah.
There's like the homeopathy tradition of opposition to like most medical interventions that I think is like getting stronger and stronger as our institutions of medical authority kind of collapse and lose all their credibility. But then really, this is, I think, mostly about the ideology of heterosexuality.
Oh, yeah.
And trying to like reverse engineer the body so that it is designed for like a socially constructed system about like what sex is and what it means. And also, I think this stuff has a political utility, right?
Yeah.
You know, it started around the pandemic, but it really exploded post-Dobbs.
After Dobbs, yeah.
And now, you know, abortion is banned in most states, or very, very hard to get. It's expensive. There's longer wait times everywhere. And the anti-choice movement isn't really stopping. There's efforts to roll back contraception access for teens, for everybody, for, you know, insurance coverage. There is a like a big birth rate and demographic panic.
Yeah.
Trying to encourage women to have more babies and scolding the ones who aren't having enough. And there's this like large scale, diffuse kind of cultural moment consisting of a lot of different efforts to like vindicate, prize, and restore masculinity and sort of apologize for and reverse women's gains over the past century.
Yeah.
And that brings me back to Alex Clark, she of Birth Control Will Make You Bisexual fame, who worked for Charlie Kirk before his death. And she was asked about whether her anti-birth control messaging had anything to do with Turning Point's pronatalist message. And Adrian, I would like you to read what she said.
Ms. Clark insists that her anti-birth control discussions aren't connected to the pronatalist messaging of Turning Point USA or her boss there. And that's, quote, "The Charlie Kirks of the world are out there being like, you need to have babies and get married younger. Then you've got me, who works for him, saying you need to be questioning birth control. They're totally unrelated. All women in general should be questioning the pill." Oh, wow. I said,
it's
a nice restaurant you've got there. It would be terrible if something happened to it. And then my boss burned down your restaurant. Who is to say whether these two things are part of the same project?
Nothing to do with one another. I mean,
incredible.
I don't think you have to like believe in a conspiracy to find this straining credulity just a tad.
Wow.
So ladies, you don't have to get pregnant. You don't have to have a period if you don't want one. You don't have to be a slave to your hormones or think of yourself as somebody dictated or destined by nature to be silly. You can be a grown-up and you don't have to listen to these quacks on the internet. And that's my spiel.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming along on this journey with me, Adrian. And thank you to all of our listeners. Please rate and review us if you like the show. If you don't like the show, please don't do that.
Yeah.
Subscribe to our Patreon and tune in next time.
In Bed with the Right is made possible by hundreds of listeners who support us via patreon.com. Our episodes are produced and edited by Mark Yoshizumi and Katie Lau. Our title music is by Katie Lau.